Welcome back, WNST TASS in Baltimore and WNST.net. It is WNST Rock Week. Appreciate you checking out some of my audio vault stuff of music over 25 years on radio. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary in December. And before I ever did radio, I talked to rock stars for a living back in the 1980s and early 90s at the first the Baltimore News American and then the Baltimore Sun. This next interview sort of spans the time and the time frame, and one of the iconic great bands of all time, Aerosmith. And this interview is with Joe Perry, the guitar player from Aerosmith. But at one point, I want to give the beginning of my music fandom and career. I was sitting in the Baltimore News American newsroom in the summer of 1984. I was 15 years old. I had been working there for about 8 months, and Sports First had folded. And because the sports department was so large and there was a whole separate newspaper being put out by sports people, the interns and the lowlies, like the 15-year-old kid working for free and answering the phones in the newsroom and running copy up and down steps and getting lunch for editors over at the new Harbor Place that was only about 4 years old at that point. And I was in the entertainment area. And a guy named Scott LaBar, who is a longtime editor at the Sacramento Bee, been there now 30 years, been there ever since he left the News American, and he turned to me, and he just took a shine to me, being a kid who liked music, and he said, have you ever heard of Aerosmith? And I said, yeah. He said, a guy named Steven Tyler is going to be calling here in about an hour. You think you can work some questions up and put together a little story on Aerosmith? And I said, yeah, I can do that. Of course I can do that. And as it turned out, an hour later when the phone rang, it was not Steven Tyler. It was Tom Hamilton, the bass player from Aerosmith. And I did interview Tom Hamilton. And the pictures that you have seen on the hashtag WNST Rock Week, and if you follow me out on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or Snapchat or anywhere, and LinkedIn even, there is a picture of an incredibly young version of me standing backstage with a drink with Steven Tyler. And that picture was taken at the Baltimore Arena in early 1985. I was 15 years old at the time, and I guess that's where the almost famous parts of my references come. And sometimes I use that hashtag for the movie that Cameron Crowe made famous. But if you've seen those pictures of that era with Kevin Cronin from REO Speedwagon, or Gary Richmond from REO Speedwagon, or Brad Whitford from Aerosmith, as well as Tom Hamilton from Aerosmith, but the Steven Tyler picture is pretty cool. It's one of my favorites. I was a chunky little monkey, or as Steve Hedgepeth used to write in the News American, an Ovaltine. At that time, that was 1985. By 1990, Aerosmith had dried out, come back, Angel was a hit, and the album Pump was a massive, massive album for them with many, many hits. And still to this day, you know, more than a quarter of a century later, many of those songs played. They had famously sobered up. During this interview, Joe Perry talks about sobriety and the importance of sobriety for Aerosmith and how drugged up the band was. This is a very, very frank conversation, and quite frankly, much better than I thought it was in my memory. You know, it's taken me 25 years to listen to any of these interviews, so I'm doing it for the first time 25 years into my radio career. This, I think, is one of my better ones. It's still as awkward as all of the rest of them. It was a very awkward thing. I was 21 years old. This is the summer of 1990. July 28th, 1990, Aerosmith played at the Capitol Center on the second time through on the Pump album. You know, Pump had probably had six hits at this point. And they're really, I love the song Fine. If you want to Google the acronym for F-I-N-E, effed up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Everything about you is so F-I-N-E, fine. And I had to ask Joe Perry about that song, and I did because I love the song. I asked him about Desmond Child, who dates back to Kiss. And I talked to Desmond about Desmond Child at length with John Bon Jovi in our chat at that point. I still have never met Desmond Child or had him on the show. That would be a dream of mine to have talked to Desmond Child in his prime. And I guess the thing that stands out from this Joe Perry interview is his accent, his incredible, incredible knowledge of the radio industry and terms like AOR and CHR, which contemporary hits radio, and AOR was album-oriented rock, and radio airplay. And it's amazing to me that even at 21, I really steered this conversation toward the business of being in a band and the emotions with being in a band and the drugs with being in a band. And so the interview with Tom Hamilton happened in January. They played at the Baltimore Civic Center at that time, January 7th, 1985. And then this interview was about 5.5 years later, and they were one of the biggest bands in the world. They had made a full comeback from the Toxic Twins era. And I'm very, very proud of this conversation with Joe Perry. I think you're going to dig it. It's an incredible chat about drugs, about going away, about drying out, and about being great. Joe Perry wanted to be great. We also talked about power ballads at that time and the song What It Takes that I still love, and Pump is a comeback album. So I never interviewed Steven Tyler. I met Steven Tyler and I have a picture of Steven Tyler, but I did interview Tom Hamilton in 85, which I don't have a copy of, and I did interview Joe Perry in 1990, and I hope you dig this conversation about the Joe Perry Project and many more things. Pump from the summer of 1990 with Joe Perry of Aerosmith.
Yes, this is Joe Perry.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good.
Oh, a little late. You got a million of them to do today?
Not of these, but in fact, this is the only one I have, but I have stuff to do.
I can imagine.
Busy on show days, usually.
What are you in, some great place in the Midwest or something?
Chicago. We're playing in Chicago.
The Horizon?
There's a new place called The World. Park.
Oh, really?
Place.
So, how are things going on this second leg sweep here?
Well, it's going pretty bad, because every time we play outdoors, it rains. It's been one of those summers. Seems like you wake up and it's sunny out. We must be playing indoors, you know.
We had the same problem here. I go to Meriwether a lot, and it's just rain there all the time.
Yeah.
I guess it's good for the farmers, huh?
Yeah, it's great for the farmers. It's bad for the shows. So we'll probably be doing, I'm glad we're playing in Landover.
A lot of the bands have chosen to go there this year for some reason. As far as the show, what kind of things are you doing differently than you did in December when I saw you?
The line was ringing. Let's see. What are we going to do different? We're going to do some different songs. I know that.
What have you dropped and what have you kept? You didn't drop anything like...
How long has it been since we've been there?
Seven and a half, eight months?
Oh, well, definitely. The set's different, way different. So I don't know what we've changed, but, you know, we're doing Other Side now and Young Lust and Love Me Two Times.
The Doors, Love Me Two Times?
Yeah. And we're doing... I don't know. Like every night, we do some different old songs. Like last night, we did two nights ago. We did One Way Street.
You still do Mama Kin and Rats in the Cellar and that kind of stuff?
Well, we do. Sometimes we do Mama Kin. Sometimes we do same old song and dance. Sometimes, you know, it depends on what we did. Moving Out the other night.
Do Last Child?
No, we didn't. We've been doing the Last Child a lot. So we've dropped that from the set. But you know, we have the basic thing, you know, and we're doing almost every song off the new record.
Can you do Angel now, or?
No.
You've never done that on this tour?
No, we do it sometimes. We change it around, you know?
You know, I just remember you guys had a thing like at the end of the tour, last tour, where you weren't doing it.
Yeah, well, we got tired of playing it, you know? But we've done it, we do it once in a while on this tour. If enough people ask us to meet and greet before the show, we put it in.
Hard to get motivated at this point? I mean, when you're so far into a tour? Or...
No, because we're throwing in new stuff. I mean, we just started doing Take Me to the Other Side about 2 weeks ago, and we started doing Love Me Two Times last week, and we keep putting in the old songs, you know what I mean? And, you know, just doing the songs off the new record, it's still gas. You know, they haven't gotten played for me yet, so it's, and the band's playing tighter. I mean, I swear it's getting better, you know?
Do you think you'd have so much staying power with this album? I mean, this album's been out a year now, right?
Well, Take Me to the Other Side just went...
Number one, right?
Number one on AOR.
And that's four for the album, is that right?
Four. That's more than anybody's done, I guess. And, you know, we're hoping it'll get in the top 10 in CHR, and that'll be great. And then after that, we're doing, they're releasing Love Me Two Times as a single because of that movie. It's coming out in that Air America movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's going to be in that. It's going to be on the album.
So whatever happened to Fine? Why did it get buried?
As far as
radio play, I mean, last time I saw you here, I remember they were playing it a little bit, but it was the time when Janie's Got a Gun was...
Yeah. Well, you know what happens is CHR, whatever CHR is playing, usually AOR has already played it, you know? So they like to do like a two-prong thing, you know, like give the AOR station something to play when the CHR thing is cooking. So, and also Fine, I don't think would have ever made it to CHR. It's just too hard, you know? So I think we had a good run on that. It did get released as a single.
Well, as far as putting a song like Fine together, how do these things happen? Just elaborate on that song in particular, because I think that's the song that pretty much brings you back to where you were in 1976.
Well, that song, it basically started on this guitar that I have that has a kind of weird tuning, and that riff was just something that I, the basic core of the song is something I had for this album, you know, it was one of the first things I wrote, and then,
where did Steven come up with all the song?
That's exactly where. That's, you know, that's just some, you know, stream of consciousness stuff, you know, that he just kind of let loose with. And then we had been working with Desmond Child on just some different songs, you know, that we were doing. And he, during the course of that, we wrote this this chorus. You know, this, just a really good hunk of chords, you know, and this, it really made a really good chorus, and we needed a chorus for Fine, so we took one of those bits and plugged it in, and it worked out really well. Desmond wasn't even there when we wrote it, when we put it into Fine and everything, so he didn't even know we used it until we called him up, you know, and said, hey, by the way, Desmond, you know that chorus that we had for blah, 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 well, now it's the chorus in Fine.
Inevitably, I'm going to write a story on Desmond Child, because I was just talking to Paul Stanley last week. We had dinner, and we were talking about Desmond Child, and I said, here's the guy's name who pops up on every rock hit in the past 15 years, and no one even knows what he looks like.
Yeah.
Tell me about Desmond Child.
Well, he's definitely... you know, kind of a...
Can you hang on? I have a son at the door.
Sure.
Yeah, hold on. Okay, I'm back. Just tell me about Desmond.
Well, he's a hippie. He's from the 60s, you know what I mean? He's a flower child, and he's, but he's really got a real gift for songs. I mean, he's one of those guys that I think will eventually write really, you know, great movie scores and stuff. He's really got it in the ear for the hooks and the choruses, you know?
How old is he?
He's my age. He's in his late 30s.
Okay, well, I had no idea, and I want to talk to him. I don't even know how to get in touch with him. But besides that, on What It Takes, did you guys plan to write a ballad? Or?
Well, what we did was we wanted to write a rock and roll song with Desmond, like, a, you know, when we sat down, because we didn't want to write another Angel, because, you know, everybody's been doing those commercial
power rock ballads.
Power rock ballads with the full-blown production and all that stuff. But I think Desmond's forte, I mean, what he can write rock songs, and he's good at it, but I think his best thing are, like, the ballads, you know, the kind of, like, the move, you know, that soar. And he, so we kept falling back into this thing, this groove but we kept on keeping it, like, really simple, you know, and the sound of it, in fact, the demo sounds like a country and western song a lot, you know, and we made it sound not quite so country for the album.
Well, I think the one thing that impressed me about it is when I heard it, I said, here's a song that's one of those power rock ballads without being one,
yeah,
and without ever having any intention. I just have a feeling that when these bands come out, you know, the White Lines, all these other bands I've heard, with these ballads, they go in and say, well, let's write the ballad for the album that's going to be the first release that's going to make us stars, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, but that used to be, in the old days, when we were in that position, that was just about the only way you got on AM radio, was you had to have a ballad.
Dream On? Or?
Yeah, well, that was like your token ballad that, you know, everybody played hard rock, but you had to have a token ballad that would get you played on the radio, you know? And now, fortunately, I think it's opened up, you know? But back in those days, it was... But I guess it hasn't changed a lot. There are a lot of bands that come out and they feel they have to have that power ballad because that's what's selling, you know? But for us, we just didn't want to do another Angel. I mean, we had done it, and, you know, and now we have a whole bunch of Angels.
Right.
And so, like, what it takes is really a lot of fun. I mean, I really like playing it. It's really bluesy, you know?
So as far as going from Done With Mirrors to Vacation to Pump, why do I see such a big difference there in those three albums, and why is Pump so Aerosmith when Done With Mirrors really wasn't?
Well, Done With Mirrors, I think, was pretty close, but it still was, it was us in our second childhood, you know what I mean? Our second infancy, you know? It's like we started to learn how to write and work again when we started doing Done With Mirrors. And I think that it's just been a really, you know, the process of getting closer to what we're about. I mean, really getting our act together is what's been happening, you know?
Did you not trust each other when you had gotten back together? I mean, I saw you guys on the Back in the Saddle tour,
yeah,
when you didn't have the album out.
Uh-huh.
And Steven was still, like, having some problems at the time, I think.
Yeah.
And I had interviewed Tom, and, you know, we'd done the backstage thing and all kinds of cool stuff. But
yeah,
it just seemed to me that these guys, I don't know if they're going to make it. You know?
Well, we were still using drugs. It was still a lot of the old going on. You know, I mean, we had hit our bottom, like, on the outside, a career bottom, but I think that Back in the Saddle tour brought us, you know, brought us to be really aware that the drugs really had to go, you know, and it was really good that we did that. And then we did it, and when we did Done With Mirrors, we were still in that process, you know, of realizing. I mean, I was still trying to like, not drink. I was just drinking on weekends, that kind of shit, and it still wasn't working. You know, like, you have to, like, just completely let go of it. You know, we had to let go of it completely. And when that happens for us, then we were able to, like, really start to touch down to what the spirit of the whole thing was, you know?
Did you guys get help, or was this cold turkey on your own?
Well, we'd been cold turkeying off and on all of the years, but I think that to really learn how to stay sober and off drugs, you know, we had to go away. We each went away at different times, you know?
I mean, a lot of people will point to the drugs and say that's the main reason. They got rid of the drugs, now they're great again. Do you see it that way?
I definitely think that it was a big part of it. I mean, 90% of it. I think that, I mean, it was us taking the drugs. It was us, you know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, I mean, it's easy to see that it was because we were taking the drugs and drinking to excess that it was keeping us from moving on. That is definitely true, you know. But I think that once you remove the drugs, then you have to, like, use what you got, you know. I mean, I see a lot of people that give up and they have this real woe is me attitude about it and they don't move, you know. But I think that that's where, like, continuing the process really helps.
So knowing that this thing is all publicized and everybody knows that you guys have had drug problems, do people ever offer you shit again or now?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny how... It's funny, you know, like, we're driving by, and, you know, kids will go, hey, you want a beer? You know, that kind of stuff.
And you don't drink beer anymore, then?
No. But for the most part, you know, most people that are in the business know that, no, and we, you know, nobody comes around.
So, as far as your fan base, you're saying kids and stuff like that, how has this changed since 1975? Has it just broadened, do you think, or?
I think it definitely has broadened. I think that there's so many, we have fans that saw us in 1975, and there are fans that are out there that don't even know what Get Your Wings is, you know, they're aware of the last two records. So we have a definite crossover.
So coming up on 40, how are you going to feel in September?
I don't know. I'm going to be on a plane on the way to Osaka. So I'll probably be jet lagged.
You'll feel like you're 40.
Probably. When I get jet lag, it feels like I got the worst flu going.
I just think it's amazing how I see 42-year-old guys who have lived pretty normal, you know, I guess sort of sedentary lifestyles, and they look 42. And then there's Steven, who has lived the life of 10 drug addicts probably, and he can still do all this energetic things on stage. What does he do to sustain this, and what do you do to sustain all this?
Because a lot of what we do is it's physical. You know, I've seen guys, I mean, I was watching PBS the other day, and there was this 90-year-old tap dancer on, and he was still doing it. He was like 87 or something. You know, he wasn't like all over the place, but he was still moving. And I think that, you know, I think that the human body is really designed to like to do a lot more than people, you know, they move a little and they go, oh, I can't do that. That's too much. You know what I mean? But that's not, I mean, the human body was made to strain, you know? And I think that's a big part of it. You know, I mean, we've always been physical, you know, even when we're, you know, f***ed up, and more now, you know, and I think that has a lot to do with it, a real lot.
Do you ever listen to those old shows when you were f***ed up and just say, oh, that was bad?
Definitely.
I mean, how do you do songs now that make it sound so much better than when you were on drugs? I mean,
we all play together.
I mean, did you ever rehearse and stuff like that when you were, you know, not sober?
Oh, yeah. All the time. We were using all the time. I mean, we wake up in the morning and have a beer. You know what I mean? It was like that. Or you wouldn't wake up in the morning because you'd been up all night. And you'd see if you could make it through the show the next day. I mean, that's what we used to do.
Well, I guess you go into these arenas now, like Landover, and I'm sure you were completely up there at one point.
Oh, yeah.
On one of your tours. What is it like going into these places with memories of memories of memories?
Well, that's one of the things I very rarely, very rarely remember shows from those days. I don't even know if I'd remember if I was sober, but that's like 10 years ago. You know what I mean?
Right.
10 or 15 years ago, my memories, you know, once in a while I remember being there from long ago, but it's more like what's going on now, you know.
So when this reunion all happened and, you know, getting back to the Back in the Saddle tour and then done with Mirrors, I mean, what held this thing together? You know, who was the person toeing the line saying, you know, look, we got to get our shit together here? You know, who was the one that, you know, started this whole thing?
As far as...
Well, I mean, who told you to get sober? I mean, like, and who told Steven to get sober? It's just all these people, it's all... up in five different areas. I mean, how did you guys decide to do it?
Tim Collins, the guy who was managing me when I was in the project.
I remember Collins Brasso was your management or
right.
Something like that in 84.
Just Mr. Collins, and he went out and he saw, I mean, he was just as bad as the rest of us, you know, and at the end of the Back in the Saddle tour, actually it was the end of the Done with Mirrors tour.
That was with Ted Nugent. You went out on that one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He just talked with a few other people and outside, and he said, you know, it's only going to go one way or the other. It's either going to go up or it's going to go down, and you know. And he kind of like brought the reality of that to our attention, you know. And he's always been kind of the rallying point, you know.
Kind of the father of the situation, keeping you guys in line.
Kind of, but not really. You know what I mean? In fact, he's younger than I am. But you know, he's the one that went out and searched out the people that we needed.
Where were you at the point when you came back to the Back in the Saddle tour? I mean, as far as, like, financially and...
And the Back in the Saddle tour?
I mean, did you have any money at that point, or had it all been pissed away?
No, that would have been long gone. In fact, that was... my girlfriend, who's now my wife, was actually paying the rent at that point.
So everything you had had from the 70s, gone?
Yeah, just about. I had a few guitars left.
Yeah, it's it's funny because I kind of equate you with Kiss because I grew up with you, you know, these two bands with the 8-tracks, you know, the old 8-tracks.
Yeah, right.
And just talking to Paul last week, I just said, you know, could that money have dried up? And he said, you know, ask some of the other bands from the 70s if it could dry up. And you know, he says Donald Trump could dry up. Anybody can dry up. So
yeah,
it's just funny.
It goes, you know what I mean? You just, especially when you're making like really stupid decisions, you know, and just spending so much money on limousines and having limousines drive your drug dealers around. It's just stupid, and it finally, you know, just doesn't work.
Well, you're all right now. You're all right now, then.
Okay.
Well, that's good. All right. Well, I guess I'll bump into you at some point next weekend, and yeah. I appreciate you talking today. I couldn't get to you guys back in December.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.